Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Today's podcast, we're going to be looking at UK equities. We have three lined up today that we're going to be getting stuck into a little bit later on in the podcast. Looking here, they're all nicely up, so it's a very positive news to be had later in the podcast on these three shares. But we're also going to be looking at the key market themes, and to do that we have with us once more Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Hello John, good to be back.
So Alan, as I mentioned, we've got three companies here nicely up on the day. So we're going to be looking at those a little bit later on. Some interesting updates from those companies. But as I said, we're going to be looking at what's driving the main indices here in the UK and overseas this morning. And of course, Alan, that is the inflation data, 10.1%.
Yep.
Joint with July's reading of 10.1%, the highest for 40 years. It was more than expected by economists. It was the consequence of rising food prices based on a lower pound, making those products more expensive, and that was the main driver of that high inflation read this morning. But Alan, looking at these figures here, looking at the market, looking at the FTSE 100, we're down 0.5%. We're back beneath that 6900 level. We were above 7000 very, very briefly yesterday. And we've, of course, got a backdrop of political debacle really going on in Downing Street. But, you know, when we're looking at these markets, Alan, you know, when do you think or do you think that, you know, at some point the market will shift their attention from, you know, looking at what's going on in the politics and start to look at these growth figures that aren't particularly good and think, OK, maybe we're trading in a range here between that sort of 6800 level up to around 7,000. It's been very tight. You know, is there a shift to be had towards growth figures that could see the market break beneath those levels there?
I think that's very possible, John. I mean, just looking at the numbers this morning, as you rightly said, it's food and non-alcoholic beverages drove this inflation number. And when you're faced with that sort of number, all I can say is thank God that Jeremy Hunt was bought into reverse the budgetary measures introduced by Kwasi Kwarteng and co. And you have to ask, just on a political basis, why is Liz Truss still in power? I mean, she's abjectly failed to deliver on that mandate. It simply was the wrong mandate, so she should now do the decent thing and walk. Politics aside, the drivers, as I said, food and non-alcoholic beverage prices up 14.5% in September, the biggest jump since April 1980, which is that's a very worrying trend. I mean, that's that affects every family in the UK at the most fundamental level. So they had to deal with this, and of course we're in the middle of this perfect storm. We're still dealing on a domestic level with the results of Brexit and some, you know, the difficulties in bringing stuff into the UK with the restructured import and export tariffs and all that entails. I think the market has to focus, and I think it's very likely if these sort of numbers continue, it's going to start to impact on spending. It's already impacting on spending power. So we're going to see this ongoing. And of course, we're coming up to the Christmas time of year. And I think, you know, the hopes for Santa rally, whilst they're not completely dashed, I think with these sort of numbers continuing to emerge, it shows that we are, you know, we're potentially on the verge of, I think, another dip in the market. So it's a concern. And of course, now, although Hunt has acted to stabilize the market in one way, of course, a lot of those measures, such as the energy bill price caps, all the rest of it, there's now uncertainty over those ongoing. And of course, I think Hunt's got to get his feet under the table and, you know, really get to grips with it before we can really make a prediction for the future. But certainly on balance at the moment, I think we're more likely to dip below 6,800 than we are pop back above 7,000. But I hope I'm wrong.
Indeed, indeed. I think it's actually quite an interesting scenario that we're going to see in markets over the next couple of weeks, because, you know, so far this year, it's been inflation data. It's been what the Bank of England are doing. It's been what the Federal Reserve are doing. And of course, it's, you know, in the last month, it's been what Liz Truss's government has been doing, dictating markets. But I think we're now at the stage where you're looking at inflation and you know, 10.1%. Yes, we're down 0.5% on the FTSE 100, but it's not a huge move by any stretch of the imagination. I think that the market's become a little bit desensitized to some extent by these big inflation data. As that would suggest to me that it's been priced into markets.
Yeah.
So it's actually, yeah, a situation now, Alan, where I can see for the first time in many months, you know, over the next couple of weeks, the market's actually driven by company earnings that are coming out. We've got some of the big US tech giants reporting next week. You know, that's likely to set the tone for the market going into the bank central bank meetings in November. And I think people are going, okay, yes, we've got inflation, we've got all of this noise going on in the economy, but what's actually happening to company earnings? We had Netflix last night report. They had some good figures. They were up about 15% overnight in the US. So that shows some strength there. That's given some support to US markets. So, you know, if we start to see company earnings coming through in a positive fashion, that may provide some support. But, you know, going back to what you say, Alan, it's very difficult to see it getting back over 7,000 was any real conviction in the short term, given the backdrop that we've got on the politics.
I really hope you're right there, John. But and you're right, you know, we are entering company earnings season. Of course, the job of the Chancellor and the government is to really provide a stable backdrop for markets to operate on. So we're not focused on what the government are doing. We're focused on company earnings. So, you know, the hope is very much that Jeremy Hunt will continue to deliver and, you know, find that balance between providing support for families, you know, in as we go into this winter of discontent, and also a stable backdrop for companies that are doing well and that are earning well, to really for those results and achievements to be reflected in the markets.
Yes, indeed. So we're going to move on to some of those results now. So I said at the beginning of the podcast that these companies were all nicely up on the day. So I hope they all still are now. So yes, they are. The first one is, it's ASOS, Alan. Currently looking here up 12% on the day, £5.50. Obviously a nice performance on the day. But if you look at the all-time highs of this stock around £80, we're trading at a fraction of where we were, you know, down 90% over that, or more over that period. But there is positivity today, Alan, that they had their final results. So what are the key takeaways from that?
Well, there is. I mean, ASOS, of course, was the darling of the dot-com boom. And really, I think that was the company that probably epitomized in the UK, you know, the sort of achievements that that could be sort of made, you know, with an online business. I've got a great little story for you. When the company first floated, several colleagues of mine were invited to participate. I think the IPO was a 5p, so they participated. And one colleague, you know, who's a great friend, and he knows who he is, said to me at the time, well, he said, I looked at the business, and he said it was online. I couldn't understand it, so I sold out at 8p. And of course, we know what happened then. I think ASOS shares hit all-time highs around £70 a share. So hugely successful business. But of course, you know, other retailers like Next have understood the ASOS model and moved to compete in recent years. And it does make me wonder, looking at these numbers. I mean, you know, the company turned over, you know, 3.9 billion still. So that's still a pretty impressive number. But of course, it was dragged down in recent weeks with news, of course, and rumours that it was going for a line of credit, which, of course, it has now secured. And I think the markets maybe responded negatively to that. Because, again, being an online business, you would expect it to be highly profitable. You know, you look at other companies that have a pure online offering. But of course, ASOS requires warehousing, it requires distribution, logistics, all of that. So I understand that the costs do mount up. But, you know, it's really struggling to deliver profit. And of course, the first half of the year, we saw a loss driven by price reductions, a loss of 32 million from a profit of 177 million previously. The company lowered guidance earlier on the year, it's also written off 130 million in excess stock because the company built inventory up to thinking it could sell the inventory, and of course it's been unable to do that. So, you know, 130 million write off is, you know, that shows pretty poor management, I think. And of course we have the new CEO in place now that is in place to deal with that, Jose Calamonte. But anyway, that aside, I think looking forward, Calamonte said that the company recognizes it needs to improve the way it operates to unlock the opportunity further of its global reach. So work is afoot, I think, to trim those costs. He said, you know, in recent years, the quest for growth has resulted in ASOS becoming excessively capital intensive, too overstretched, too complex, which has impacted on growth in its key markets. So, you know, there's a frank admission. The company's recognized what's wrong. And I think on the back of that, certainly the share price response this morning up 12% to 549 pence or £5.49 is good news. Gives the company a market capitalization of just over £500 million. That's down from the billions it was worth previously. So would you buy this now? I'm looking at it and I think, you know, it's come off those highs. But I think what we've got to see is tangible evidence, first of all, that this company is actually it's actually turning the super tanker around, in that it's cutting costs, and those are starting to impact on the bottom line. So we see improved profitability, better EBITDA numbers, a recipe for growth going forward. So, yeah, big tick in the box for the new CEO, but still a work in progress.
Yes, I think what you've alluded to there, Alan, with these results is not so much good news. It's just slightly better than bad news.
Yes.
They've had. I mean, a loss for a company like ASOS that's been operating for the time that they have now. Of course, when they first came to the market, it was novel. It's one of the most successful technology stories here in the UK, and what we've seen over the last 15 years here in the markets. Of course, you outline there the moves that it's had at the beginning of its life, but now, you know, looking at where it is now, it's an established business, and operating online, you know, it is one that you think would have favorable margins compared to the bricks and mortar retailers. However, you know, the complexities that you alluded to there means that hasn't been the case. And we're going into, as you said, a cost of living crisis, which makes it difficult to see the next quarter being any positive than the last quarter, and possibly the quarter after that as well. It's going to set to be a tough quarter for them. So looking at them here, yes, you know, the news today's, you know, not terrible. It's slightly better than that. I think that's why we see the share price movement. Mm. But I think we're going to have to see more from ASOS in terms of their strategy before there's any real confidence given
I think if I were a holder and I bought in over the past month or so, then I'd continue holding the shares. But certainly, I'd probably be looking for this to dip a bit lower, maybe before the recovery. And as you said, John, you know, the headwinds ASOS are facing, and those are global headwinds too, you know, because every country has been affected by inflation, by food pricing, and so on. So there are a number of macro issues that the company has to deal with.
Indeed, you know, ASOS has an app on, you know, millions of people's phones globally, so you know that's a big step. It's just what they do behind that app going forward to generate revenues with an attractive margin. Is going to be the key for this company going forward. So let's now move on, Alan, to the second company that we're going to be looking at today. Again, a very healthy rise on the day. It's ECR Minerals, ones that we've discussed on the podcast on numerous occasions. They tend to have a a strong level of news flow, and looks like that has been continued. So what's happened today, Alan?
Well, it's been very much a red letter day, to coin a phrase. The company has a number of assets. It's a mining and exploration company with assets primarily in Victoria in Australia. The Creswick asset and the Bayliston asset, which includes the Bayliston, of course, includes the Blue Moon prospect, the company currently drilling. They also have an asset up in Lulworth Range in North Queensland, which where there's a field team on the ground currently collecting samples and that in order that the company can put together some drill targets and. That they've already found visible gold up there, so that's a real shot in the arm for them. But this morning, the company, I'm looking at the share price at the moment. It's been as high as 30% higher, up at 0.9p, currently 0.87p. Last week, the company announced it had completed its final drilling at Bayliston, and. It pulled some decent grams out of the ground in terms of gold from an area called the Marion's Glen. It was a geological anomaly, a kind of fold in the ground, which of course creates pockets for mineralization. And it reported a 9 grams per ton composite grade over 4 meters, which is a good reading. As I say, the team are drilling the Blue Moon asset there still. That's one that the chief exec Andrew Haythorpe is particularly excited about, because the mineralization is broadly spread there. So instead of 1 or 2 meters, you're talking 7 to 10 to 11 meters, and he's referred to it as quote unquote commercial grades. We then come to today, and the reason for the share price drive today is that Andrew Haythorpe and Adam Jones visited the Creswick asset early this year, and they, from a previous drilling campaigns, in particular the 2021 campaign, they extracted some good grades, but the mineralization there is called veiny mineralization, and also when you pull stuff out of the ground you get this nuggety effect. So what they decided to do after the visit was to retest the core samples there. And what they've done is they pulled it's something of a gold bonanza, really. I mean, they've pulled some really good grades out of the ground. 7 meters, 7 meters at 47.75 grams per ton. I mean, that's instantly commercial grade straight away. Not only that, ECR they recently sold one of their properties. They raised £550,000 sterling, or $900,000 Australian dollars. They have two other properties and an asset in the Philippines, which the company has hinted that it will offload to add to the existing cash pile it has. But it has a property at Brewing Lane, or the Brewery Lane property at Creswick, which is actually on the land where these grades are being found. So unlike many mining companies, which have to talk to the landowners and maybe cut them in to get access to the land to drill, they can just go straight on here, access the land, they can store all their equipment there and actually get to work directly on the land there itself. So this is really exciting. The other factor is that, again, unlike so many small cap drilling companies, ECR have a drilling rig that's their own drilling rig, the Midas rig, which is operating, just finished operating at Bayliston. But they've also just bought a second rig, and that's arriving at Melbourne Port shortly. And what it means is they can get those rigs straight onto the land. They're not hampered by waiting for the team to arrive. They can just get straight on and do it. So despite the fact we've had delays, COVID-based delays, on getting samples back from the laboratory, it means that in terms of drilling, they can crack on and do what they want when they want, and that really sets them apart from other small cap exploration companies. So Andrew Haythorpe said today, his visit to the Creswick tenements with Adam Jones, he saw the potential on the ground for himself, and was convinced that the plan to retest the Creswick core samples was well justified. And with those sort of grades back today, we can see why. As I say, shares still up 27% at the moment, giving the market capitalization of 9.2 million. I mean, really, with these assets on the ground and also the property assets that the company has, we're way behind where the company, I believe, should be valued. And I'm sure as the news continues to arrive in the next few months, we're going to see a reset on the valuation for ECR Minerals.
Just look at this, and something that we speak about in the podcast on numerous occasions, Alan, you know, what's happening in the junior resource sector at the moment. You know, just looking at the chart here of ECR, do you think that's, you know, a symptom of what's happening in the wider market? You know, looking at, you know, a bit of a decline that we've seen over the prior months, of course, there's a good gain there today. Or do you think it's a case that, you know, maybe specifically with ECR, people are waiting for, you know, hoping for a little bit more in the short term for them? Or is it just a wider market problem that we're seeing overall?
It's been a wider market problem, John. And you know, we've seen, I think, you know, with resource companies, of course, you're exploring for metals, gold and assets, and that process takes a long time, and it's always hard to relate, you know, the start point to the finish point. But the of course, it's well documented that the previous chief exec, Craig Brown, died, in fact, nearly a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, which is very sad. But the new chief exec came in the spring this year, Andrew Haythorpe, and he's got a great track record. He's both a qualified geologist. He's run many companies, also a former analyst with an investment bank, a gold analyst. So he's got a very deep understanding of the markets. And he's very, Andrew's always cautiously optimistic. You know, he's not one to go out and say, oh, this is fantastic, we can do this straight away. His approach is cautious and pragmatic, and he's taking this stage by stage, but he's got a track record. Also, he developed a company called Crescent Mining from an $8 million gold exploration company into a $250 million gold producer. So he took that company all the way through. So he understands the process, and of course, as shareholders in ECR, many people will be hoping he can do the same here. But I think he's got all the tools at his disposal to do that.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure one that I'm going to be updating on the podcast in due course. So the last company we're going to look at today, Alan, is also one that we've discussed on the podcast previously, Technology Minerals. I'm looking at headlines of acquisitions. So what's happening here?
Well, Technology Minerals, I believe today, has finally removed the overhang in the markets that has dogged the stock for a long time. The company was came to market at the end of last year. Chief Exec Alex Stanbury and Executive Chairman Robin Brundle. Of course, Robin Brundle is very well known in the motorsport industry as the brother of Martin Brundle. And Robin, through his contacts, has really driven this, excuse the pun, he's driven the business hard along with Alex to develop it. But it's the first UK listed sustainable circular economy company for the battery metals industry. The company has a bunch of mining assets. It has the Idaho Blackbird project, which is a cobalt and copper project, and that's progressing nicely. The Emporium project, which is also cobalt, an asset in Cameroon, which is also a nickel and cobalt asset, and an asset in Ireland, which is the Leinster asset, prospective for lithium. Then we have the Astermet asset in Spain, and that's northwest Spain. That's 7 exploration permits, and that's prospective for cobalt, nickel, and copper. So that's where the new metals are going to come from. On the other side of it, they have a company called Recyclus, which was a 49% owned company. And Recyclus is developing a blueprint for industrial scale recycling of batteries. And these are lead acid batteries and also lithium batteries. In order to do that, they've had to work to develop battery boxes, which make it safe. In other words, safe transportation for batteries from the storage depot to the recycling plant. Logistically, that's been a big infrastructure to set up. But they now have the blueprint for that. I know Robin, Alex and the team are taking this out around the world to talk to different companies and different automotive organizations as to how they can recycle their batteries at end of life. And the recycling business is hugely profitable. They put some numbers beside it, which indicated that there are two plants that have just been commissioned. They've been awaiting approval from the EA, the Environmental Agency, and that's now progressed. We have the Tipton recycling plant and the Wolverhampton plant. One's a lead acid plant, the other is a lithium recycling plant. And from that, the material that's recycled is worth an awful lot of money. Had a contract with Slicker Recycling to process batteries for recycling, but certainly if you look at lead recycled, that's worth £1,100 per ton, and then from the lithium batteries, the black mass that's created from recycling lithium batteries is worth just under £5,000. Pounds per ton, so that's hugely valuable, you know, and can be resold into the market, and those metals therefore go through their entire life cycle and they get recycled back into the process again. So the company currently has it's currently trading 1.7p. shares are up nearly 20% this morning, and that's on the news that from owning 49% of Recyclers, the company has finally agreed to acquire the entire share capital of Recyclers, which will be a huge relief, because it means now Recyclers operations are fully integrated with Technology Minerals PLC, and that's vitally important. And I think that's removed, to my mind, the final overhang that has been really dogging the company throughout the year. Also, a lot of progress with the mining projects as we've gone forward this year. So I think, now that's complete, now those plants are coming on stream, I think we're going to see an awful lot of news from the company and, a potential revaluation in the coming weeks and months.
I mean, just looking here back to the interim results, which slightly delayed earlier on this year, Alan, there wasn't any revenue recorded in the period to the end of last year. I mean, is there any visibility on when Technology Minerals will be able to start recording revenue?
Well, that's entirely what delayed it more than anything were the getting the necessary permissions in place from the various agencies. And of course, I mentioned the lab delays with COVID for ECR Minerals just now. There have been delays in various government departments, also through COVID, through sickness, and that's although people are now back at work, it has continued to be a factor, because there's been a backlog, and I'm sure we're seeing it, across so many different businesses and industries, that because of COVID backlogs, some companies are still catching up. But nonetheless, once the recycling plants are up and running, then literally it's like a sausage factory. It'll just keep churning out. The metals will be resold back into the marketplace, and it will solve what will be a huge problem as we go forward, particularly for EVs and clean technology, is that there is a shortage and there will be a supply squeeze at some point for battery metals. And what Recyclers are doing, and Technology Minerals, they're dealing with that by taking what's already out there, end of life, and putting it back into the market so it can be reused. And that's crucial. And I think what's surprising is that it hasn't really been thought about by governments around the world. It's something that I think a lot of governments around the world have thought, well, we'll have to deal with that at some point, but we'll, I'm sure we can get in contact with people at the appropriate time. But of course, Technology Minerals have seen that issue emerging, and they're out there now. They have a blueprint in place for this, and I think what they've got is a hugely scalable business on the back of that.
Yes, I'm sure investors will be interested to see the revenue figures when they start to come through, because obviously the operations that they do are vital to meeting net zero and climate change goals by 2050. So I'd be pleased to see any updates from the company in due course. So just as a recap now of the stocks that we discussed today, first of all, of course, was ASOS with a ticker of ASC. It was then ECR Minerals with a ticker of ECR. And just to finish off there was Technology Minerals with a ticker of TM1. Alan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, we have the next instalment of our virtual conferences coming up on the 8th of November. It's going to be focused on investment trusts this time around. And actually mentioning there, looking at climate change goals, a number of the trusts there are focused on renewable technologies. So if that's a sector that you're particularly interested in, do look at the events section on the UK Investor Magazine website where you'll be able to get yourself signed up. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.